Check podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Sophie Silks, and I'm the Director of Strategic Engagement at COAST. COAST is Pacific Canada's hub for the sustainable blue economy. We help advance ocean entrepreneurs in British Columbia through new venture support, access to facilities and equipment, training and workforce development, and ecosystem connection. The COAST membership provides access to these benefits, as well as to our network of ocean innovation hubs, our digital communities, events, special project opportunities, and to our new Blue Pathways learning and workforce development platform. You can learn more about COAST programs and membership at canadacoast.ca/join. On today's episode of COAST Talks, we're thrilled to welcome Maranke Harris, an award-winning deep-sea scientist with experience in climate engineering and intergovernmental multi-vessel research expedition planning on the high seas. Currently completing graduate studies in oceanography at the University of Victoria, her research focuses on innovations provided by the most unexplored areas of the ocean, containing the most potential for discovery. Beyond academic pursuits, she is the founder of creative science communication and consultation brand, The Imaginative Scientist. Her brand experience includes more than 70 national and international speaking engagements, documentary narration, video production collaborations garnering over 500,000 views, and consultation for gallery installations, video game development, and film production. She has been featured by CBC News, BBC Wildlife, TEDx Victoria, the Ocean Exploration Trust, and more, and is an active CBC Radio Canada contributor. Welcome, Maranke.
Thank you for having me.
One of the best introductions that I've ever had the privilege of reading. We're so delighted to have you on the COAST Talks podcast. We'll start by just passing the mic to you to learn a bit more about your background and what your connection is to the blue economy. So maybe you can take us back a few years and let us know how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, my connection to the blue economy lies in exploration, extreme environments, and innovation. And those are three areas that I'm completely enamored with. So because I'm enamored with those three areas, I have one foot in academia, being a graduate student, and one foot in industry, being a science manager for a deep sea exploration company and founder of my own science communication business. And I've always loved water, like many in the ocean space, but unlike many, I really didn't grow up anywhere near it. So what I had instead was documentaries and films like Blue Planet and James Cameron's The Abyss. And I first encountered my specific study subject, which is hydrothermal vents, in undergrad while researching deep sea topics for a literature review that I had to write. So that was kind of just an instant, oh, this is for me moment. Like I had never felt
hydrothermal vents. Yeah. This is for me. Okay.
Really
love
gets
it.
Me going.
Tell us more.
So I had never felt so drawn to an area of science before. It's just full of such uniqueness and rarity, and there's such intrigue of the unknown with it. So all of that was fascinating. So once I had my interest, it all became about how to get into deep sea exploration. It's a super niche topic. There aren't many opportunities for those that are just starting out. So I really had to work my way from shallow ocean research to the deep. So I've worked for about 6 organizations across 5 cities in 3 countries. I've survived, I like to say, survived the Bermuda Triangle 6 times.
Whoa.
And lived on research vessels for months at a time. And I've created a network of really inspiring people. So I started out at the University of Guelph in Canada. I worked on barnacle science. I was using image analysis technology to quantify barnacle microtopography. So looking at all the little different holes between barnacles in the intertidal zone. And then after that, I went to studying climate engineering tactics in the Bermudian Ocean. That was at the Bermuda Institute of Ocean Sciences. And then I was helping out with large-scale water quality monitoring programs and examining the effects of this really specialized clay technology on mitigating Florida red tide, and also how it affects the chemical and physical properties of seawater. So that was in Florida at Moat Marine Laboratory. And then I came to the west coast of Canada, finally. But before starting grad school, I worked on Pan-Pacific high seas expedition planning with the North Pacific Andronymous Fish Commission. So that's just an intergovernmental organization that's run by five countries: Canada, the U.S., Japan, South Korea, and Russia, all the Pacific-facing countries. And yeah, so that's kind of how I got where I am. It's a long story.
That's amazing. I am so impressed. And as you're describing it, you can kind of, I'm hearing where research becomes applied research and companies are formed, because you have crossed so many technologies in that history, that brief history of all the things you've worked on. So that's amazing. I'll kind of zero in maybe on the most, what is your current research focus, if I may, among all of those different fields? Can you tell us a little bit about that, and also the role that you play on the expeditions that you've been a part of?
Absolutely. I study hydrothermal events. So those are basically superheated seafloor geysers. They're found 1,000 to 4,000 meters down on the seabed, so deep, deep sea. And they're located all over the world. They're found wherever tectonic plates interact, and especially where they're diverging and forming new seafloor. So they're kind of like the chimneys of an underwater city is what they look like. And they create these really dense oases of life because they release plumes of scalding mineral-rich water that reaches temperatures up to 400 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
And it's laden with known toxins. And that fuels entire ecosystems through chemosynthesis. So it's like photosynthesis, but it's using the chemicals coming out of the vents instead of sunlight. And you get some really cool animals down there. Like at the Galapagos Rift, you have giant tube worms that are up to 6 feet in length, and they're like as thick as your forearm. It's quite wild.
Ow.
And on expeditions where I collect my own samples, the goal is hydrothermal vents. But on expeditions where I'm working in industry, we explore an abundance of deep sea environments. So cold water corals, seamounts, cold seeps, which are like vents, but cold and bubbly instead of hot and plumey, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also abyssal plains. And I've spent over 150 days at sea with teams of really amazing individuals, just collaboratively exploring our depths with submersibles. And my two roles are mainly either a hydrothermal vent specialist or a science manager. So as science manager, my job is basically just to make sure that all the shipboard science runs smoothly. So leading teams in processing samples, running the wet lab, data management, coordinating with the engineering team to make sure the submersibles are ready for sampling, and all of that stuff.
It can be challenging to understand what jobs are available. And I feel like you've just listed a couple that are probably new to many people who might be listening to this. So that's pretty amazing that you've gotten to focus in. Do you have kind of a favorite part of what you're working on right now?
Yeah, I am. Well, when I go out to sea, that's my favorite part of my job.
Yeah,
that's the most glamorous part.
Right.
A lot of it is like working behind the scenes, doing a lot of computer work. But everybody loves being at sea. You see the most amazing things. Like this June, a pod of humpback whales came right up to the ship, and they stayed and played around for like an hour. And if you jumped over the railing, you would land on them. They were that close.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm curious to ask you actually about some of the technologies that you just mentioned as well. When you're describing your role as making sure everything's ready for the mission and that the submersibles are ready, can you share a little bit more? Like, I'm trying to paint a picture of the types of technologies that you're working with out there. So could you just like list a few or tell us about a couple of those that you might work with?
One of the main ones is bathymetric mapping. So that all works with sonar, and it's attached to the hull of the ship, or at a finer resolution, it could be attached to the submersibles that actually go down to the seafloor. Because I think when it's attached to the hull of the ship, the resolution is like 300 meter. But when it's attached to the submersible, you actually get 1 meter or less.
Mm.
There was actually a type of mapping called INSAS that gets 1 centimeter resolution.
Wow.
So that was incredible to see, because it was like somebody took a photo of the seafloor, except it was just sonar mapping. We use ROVs mainly, so robot-operated submersibles or remote-operated submersibles. And on those, we have all sorts of different sampling paraphernalia, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
You can get push cores, and we have bio boxes, slurp jars. We can get anything, basically.
That's amazing. Okay. It's for those of us that spend a lot of time on land, also behind a computer, it's pretty amazing to imagine that. Something that I think is really incredible is that you have this really deep research experience and expedition planning and management experience, and then also have this other side of what you do that's related to communications. I recently watched that, maybe it was a teaser for the keynote that you gave at the Girls and STEAM Summit that was hosted at Vancouver's Science World over the summer. So I want to shift gears a little bit and ask to learn more about how you got involved with science communications.
I kind of fell into all of it, and then I realized I really loved it. Mm. So I actually grew up really shy, and I never would have thought that I'd be speaking to big audiences the way I am now. But in 2020, I got an internship to go out with the company that I work with now, the Ocean Exploration Trust, and as an intern, and it was going to be my first time at sea, but we all know what happened in 2020, so that didn't happen. Internship was postponed, and instead, they asked me to do a live event on their YouTube channel, so that was called Opening Doors to Deep Sea Research. Mm. And when I accepted, it didn't really resonate just how large the platform was. So I'm an admitted perfectionist and I like to prepare extensively. But when the day came, suddenly I was live in front of thousands of people, and there were questions coming in from like Scotland and Australia and Panama, all over the place. And so I was just thrust into this world of big audiences and live communications, and I absolutely loved it. So public speaking led to consulting and on-camera hosting and documentary narration, radio presenting. It all just kind of snowballed. And it branches far beyond the ocean sector now, because I work on projects that cover life sciences and engineering, technology and medicine as well.
So this is with the Imaginative Scientist, your company.
Exactly.
So maybe you can tell us a little bit more. We're curious about the intersections between other sectors and the ocean sector, because we know that as you're describing, the technologies and science that comes out of all kinds of different places impacts the ocean industry in the end. So I'm curious about maybe two things. One is the kind of clients. You're mentioning some of them that you're working with or would like to be working with. And then among them, what sorts of common threads, if any, have you noticed between the kinds of challenges that they're facing in their communications fields?
I've worked with everything from individuals to large companies like CBC and the National Film Board of Canada, and a myriad of sectors. So film production, radio, universities, conservation groups, tech hubs, hospitals, exploration nonprofits, and even other science communication companies. And I'm actually a microbiologist and an oceanographer by training, but I really love all forms of science. So I found that keeping the clientele broad has really helped things be consistently interesting and helped me learn a lot as well. So in the future, I really hope to host and produce science shows and documentaries. So if Netflix or PBS or National Geographic is listening.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, that'd be great. I also really want to collaborate with other scientists more and help them get their stories out there. We are notoriously bad communicators, and there is so much brilliant science that's just locked away in journals. Actually, up to 50% of papers are never read by anybody but the authors, the referees, and the journal editors. So that's a lot of knowledge that just goes into the abyss. And we have these echo chambers that really hinder the advancement of society and science. So effective science communication has impact on policies and healthcare and agendas. So there's real power in getting the work that we do in front of stakeholders. And that's something that I'd really like to contribute to. And I also just hope to continue merging the worlds of art and science in a way that makes science inviting and accessible. So that kind of leads into that, what are the common threads that I've seen between the challenges my clients face? Because I operate in those two worlds, so art and science, and I service those overarching sectors currently. And the science clients really struggle with engaging audiences in a way that's captivating and informative, whereas the arts clients normally request scientific consultation. So they want to ensure their creations are based in real science, especially when they're trying to convey scientific concepts. So for example, there's this LA artist I worked with called Isabel Beavers, and she created installations all surrounding deep sea mining and covering deep sea mining and types of deep sea mining as well, because there are three different types. So I worked with her to make sure that that was all based in real science instead of just pure. I love pure creativity, but sometimes if you want to get the message across to other stakeholders and people outside of the art world, it's better if it's based in real science. And I've also worked with writers who create exploration novels. And I have that background in science and art myself. So marrying those two worlds through my work is something that I really enjoy.
Amazing. I'm picturing the acknowledgement section of a book now, and I see where your name would fit in. So that's such an important role to play. I'm curious to learn more about the mentorship and support, perhaps, that you've been able to access as you've built this company, because something that we hear quite often is in school, and especially in a science education, sometimes business isn't something we learn. Mm-hmm. So we have to go quite far out of our way to find those skill sets and to find folks to help us create our ventures. So I'd love to hear more about your experience. Again, getting back to the, it's hard to know what you don't know, so it can be hard to form a company this creative and innovative. What kinds of support were really helpful to you on this journey?
Luckily, I have an incredibly supportive network. And where I am in my scaling process right now, it works really well. Most of the projects that have come my way and the companies and individuals have reached out have been them coming to me. And that's mainly because of my commitments to finish grad school. So that's eating up most of my time right now. Mm-hmm. But I am a quick learner and I'm really enjoying this. So I do have plans to scale the Imaginative Scientist post-grad school. And I've really been meeting with two kinds of people so far. So I have the people on the other side of the coin from me who know how to scale and run the business, but they're successful, but they're early career business owners. Mm-hmm. So one thing I would really benefit from is being able to get directional tips from people who are later stage in their career. And also longer term mentorship and training would also be lovely. So I've been meeting with MBA students and early career business owners. And then I've also been meeting with academics who have successfully broken into the business side of things through startups. There's Dr. Hensi Singh, and she's a climate scientist and a former UVic professor who has turned into a climate technology founder. And she's doing incredible things like predicting weather 10 years into the future with her company Planet AI. So she's given me some really great pointers as well. But going forward, to be able to scale it to where I want to go, as somebody who's very new to this space, I would really benefit from hearing from more later stage entrepreneurs and having longer term mentorship and training.
I love it. And I feel you have the expertise scientifically to also see maybe what some founders know but can't communicate well about what's very special about their innovations, and can kind of come to them with some interesting ideas about how to create new communications tools and tactics to move their move their ventures forward. That's really important. We're here in British Columbia, so I do have just a question about your connection to BC. I understand you're from out of province, didn't grow up near the ocean, as you say, so it's a wonderful place to be. And we also have some special access, I believe, to some hydrothermal vents, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm curious to know more about your experience here in British Columbia and what that's been like for you, especially when you think of all these cross-sectoral collaborations that you get to work on in your job.
It's the place to be for ocean sector, for sure. I'm from a landlocked area of Ontario, Canada. I think I might have said that earlier, maybe not. But it's a world of difference when you come out here, just the resources that are available. And I've never been surrounded by so many other ocean people. So the network that I've been able to build hasn't been astonishing. And also on the deep sea side of things, like you mentioned, BC does have hydrothermal vents, and it's an incredibly unique deep sea environment out here because you have all of the charismatic deep sea environments super close together. So seamounts, vents, cold seeps. It's really the only place in the world where you can see and study them all within one day if you're out there with a research ship.
Wow.
So it really amps up just how much exploration can be done. What I see for further innovation in this space kind of relates to what I study. 99% of the deep sea is unexplored, so there's really seemingly endless opportunity. And in my subject of study specifically with drug discovery, there is a company in the UK in London called Basecamp Research, and they seem to be making a lot of strides with this in non-deep sea environments. But drug discovery in deep sea environments is something that BC has a lot of potential for innovation and exploration expansion. But more importantly, lessening this bottleneck that occurs within drug discovery, because we have about 35,000 compounds from the sea of marine origin that are known, and we discover about 1,000 compounds per year. But we only have one in 2,550 tested compounds that actually lead to applications for these marine projects. So there's a huge bottleneck between discovering the compounds and actually having them come into the market as something. And there would be really vast potential health benefits for reducing those barriers to ocean biodiscovery. So that's another area of innovation for BC to get into. And I'm sure there are people out there doing it. Maybe I just don't know about them, but
they'll be listening to the podcast and we'll make the connection. So yeah, maybe we can turn back to some of the research questions, the specific areas that you're focusing in on when you think about the vent environment. And I love that you can study all of those different places within one day. That's pretty special. And I don't hear that very often. So it's nice to, I'll underline that for the listeners. But maybe you can click into whether it's drug discovery or some other piece of the applied research that you're working on. Do you have some questions that you can share with us?
Yeah. Everything at hydrothermal vents runs on microbial power. So fungus, bacteria, archaea, viruses as well. But I study bacteria specifically, and that is what churns the bottom of the food web at vents. So the microbes down there are like plants up here. And because the environment is under such immense pressure and exposed to such high heats, up to 400 degrees Celsius, those microbes are really specially adapted and they have unique compounds within them. And those compounds are the basis of drug discovery. So I'm a microbiologist, a deep sea microbiologist, and the overall goal of my research project is to kind of evaluate microbial biopharmaceutical potential and community structure along the life cycle of a vent. So from super active, super heated, charismatic plumes to completely eroded chimneys that have been washed away by the ambient seawater, because over its life cycle, it stops venting. Mm-hmm. So I just want to find where the pharmaceuticals are most likely to be in a nutshell. And we have biopharmaceuticals like penicillin that have been discovered from plants and different molds and different parts of nature all across history. And the deep sea is no different. So we have a serious issue within our medical field right now, because by 2050, we have drug-resistant infections that are projected to cause up to 10 million deaths per year. So sourcing new drugs from new places is really important. And deep sea species, big and small, offer us resources for those new drugs. So that's kind of what I work on, looking for them within the tiny, tiny bacteria.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. And it's interesting to hear that BC has some great potential to be a leader in that field. It's not something that we've talked about on this podcast, I don't think, or heard too much about. So that's really interesting. Wow. Do you have other geographies that you are frequently doing this research in or collaborating with outside of BC?
Yeah, I was at the Galapagos Rift last fall collecting some samples there. And I have collaborators that are helping with processing them right now. So anywhere hydrothermal vents are, I'd be interested in collecting samples from. But for the purposes of my graduate degree, BC vents and Galapagos Rift vents are all that I've been able to get to.
That's a lot. That's substantial. That's wonderful. Well, I'd love to give you the opportunity to let us know what's next for you. We've heard about what you're focusing on with the Imaginative Scientists and know that you're finishing your graduate studies and probably have some writing to do at this point.
Yes.
But we always want to make sure we give listeners a place to follow along and to learn more about everything that you've started to share with us today.
Yeah, well, MaronkeHarris.com, my website, is a great place to follow along. Also, Imaginative Sci on Instagram. So just the word imaginative and then SCI. And what's next for me? I'd love to keep exploring the deep sea and scale my business as well, my science communication business.
Okay.
See what happens with that.
I have another question for you that I'll ask before we go. Video game consultation.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I'm like, I really wanted to get to this. As I said, it's quite a diverse bio. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? And I'm also thinking of BC and in Canada, there's such a rich economy for video games. So tell us about what that was like.
So that I can actually talk about it now because it's been publicly released. Before, I had signed an NDA, so I just had to tell people. It was very impressive, actually. I just had to tell people, sorry, I've signed an NDA.
I love it.
Very exclusive.
Excellent timing.
But the game is called Tides of Tethys by Black Rust LLC, and it's an immersive underwater simulation game. So it's centered around exploring and surviving uncharted depths of an alien world. It really ties well into my deep sea focus. And it was really, really fun to collaborate with them. They basically found out about me through that first science communication talk I had done with the Ocean Exploration Trust on YouTube. So they watched that and then got in contact with me to help consult their video game. And that was a really great project. I got to guide its creation, and they'd bounce ideas off of me to ensure that everything they were planning to do with it was scientifically sound. And they asked me a lot of questions about deep sea ecosystems for inspiration as well. So the creators really just wanted to focus on making an experience that was both incredibly imaginative, but still tethered to real aspects of science. And that was a very cool way to contribute to science communication.
That's amazing. I love this multimedia activation. That sounds incredible. Well, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it. Is there any last words? We've got where to find you, but anything else that you want to leave our listeners with? I think we don't get a communications perspective that often, and tied in with the deep sea scientist expertise that you bring, it's really special to have you here.
I guess I would just leave them with, don't be afraid to mix sectors. As you've been saying, I have a very diverse portfolio, and I think that's because I find so many things interesting and so many things can be done underneath the umbrella of deep sea exploration and the umbrella of science communication. So trying new things is incredibly important, and you never know where it'll lead, because for me, everything has led to one other thing. So, yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Maranke, for joining us on this episode of Coast Talks. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We are very excited to keep track of you and your expeditions, and are really thrilled to have you here in BC to learn more about Coast and listen to our full library of Coast Talks podcasts. You can find us at canadacoast.ca.